Good morning, this is Bill Whitney, substituting for Bill Lynch with the CBS World News Roundup.
The Norwegian Nobel Committee has resolved that the Nobel Peace Prize for 1986 should be awarded to author Elie Wiesel.
The announcement came this morning in Oslo.
It is the committee's opinion that Elie Wiesel has emerged as one of the most important spiritual leaders and guides in an age when violence, repression, and racism continue to characterize the world.
Elie Wiesel, teacher and writer, has been a human rights activist since he survived the Nazi concentration camps at Auschwitz and Buchenwald. His father, mother, and youngest sister all died in the camps. Wiesel is now 58, a naturalized American citizen. At his home in New York City this morning, he told CBS News that winning the Nobel Prize only gives his crusade new impetus.
I carry that past with me, within me, every hour, every minute, the day, of the night. However, that is not morbid. It's an urgency that I have as a result of that. An urgency to do something with those memories, with those tales. Always to do something for my people, the Jewish people. And for all people, if I can. For the children who die in Somalia, in Ethiopia. For the children who are being killed now in absurd wars in Iraq and Iran. And for all the dissidents and refuseniks who are still waiting for freedom.
Elie Wiesel says he hasn't thought yet about how he'll use the Nobel Peace Prize award, $290,000. President Reagan went on the air last night with his version of what happened in Reykjavik, an upbeat, optimistic view that much was accomplished even though nothing was resolved.
Our ideas are out there on the table. They won't go away. We're ready to pick up where we left off.
This is Jacqueline Adams at the White House. In a massive effort to rally public opinion, President Reagan today meets with congressional leaders, network anchormen, newspaper columnists, and a host of government officials. As he did last night from the Oval Office, the president will try to put the best face on the breakdown of the Reykjavik talks.
We prefer no agreement than to bring home a bad agreement to the United States.
Mr. Reagan and his aides have been trying to answer one key question. Why did the president refuse to give in to the Soviets' demands? Why did he not agree to scale back SDI, the Strategic Defense Initiative, in exchange for a sweeping cutback in strategic and medium-range missiles?
SDI is America's insurance policy that the Soviet Union would keep the commitments made at Reykjavik. SDI is America's security guarantee. SDI is what brought the Soviets back to arms control talks at Geneva and Iceland. SDI is the key to a world without nuclear weapons.
Though he does not know when or whether Mikhail Gorbachev will come to the United States, the president believes there is still reason to hope for an arms control agreement. Jacqueline Adams, CBS News, the White House.
This is Bill Redeker in London. The Soviets began their diplomatic offensive today by dispatching chief arms negotiator Viktor Karpov to London. At a meeting with Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, Karpov explained Moscow's proposals for American and Soviet arms reductions in an apparent effort to enlist America's staunchest ally to persuade Washington to be more flexible. Karpov plans to visit several Western European capitals to explain what went wrong in Reykjavik and what can be done to break the U.S.-Soviet impasse.
There should be search for a way out of this situation and needs effort on both sides.
Meanwhile, the initial shock following the breakdown of the talks in Iceland seems to have dissipated. America's NATO allies have rallied around President Reagan. Italy's foreign minister said more ground had been covered at Reykjavik than could have been hoped for at first. Belgium's foreign minister reminded the allies that, quote, nothing is lost if we keep our cool. There had been hope that the two superpowers would return today to the laborious Geneva talks on arms reductions, but the Soviets did not show up. CBS News has been told, however, that the two sides are expected to meet tomorrow in Switzerland. Bill Redeker, CBS News, London.
Secretary of State George Shultz said this morning that he expects to meet with Soviet Foreign Minister Shevardnadze next month in Vienna. It's 5 minutes past the hour. 4 days after the earthquake demolished parts of the Salvadoran capital, the search for survivors in the rubble goes on around the clock. But the death toll mounts, and as correspondent David Dow reports, so does the damage assessment.
El Salvador's President Napoleon Duarte says it may take up to $2 billion to rebuild public services and facilities in the nation's earthquake-stricken capital. virtually every public building is damaged, he said, and he'll soon be going to Washington and Western Europe in search of financial aid. Duarte placed the death toll from Friday's quake at nearly 1,000 and climbing, with perhaps 9,000 injured.
This is terrifying. If you just keep on waiting day after day and the thing keeps on maintaining the intensity that it is.
The city continues having scores of aftershocks, including one measuring 5 on the Richter scale, which sent people fleeing from several buildings. There were no reports of major damage. Mixed with the tragedy is occasional good news. Just as some officials were ready to write off the possibility of survivors in a major downtown office building, rescue workers reached a young woman, alive, exhausted, but apparently all right. David Dow, CBS News, San Salvador.
A strong earthquake, 5.7 on the Richter scale, shook the eastern coast of Japan, north of Tokyo, early today, but officials say they have no reports of serious damage or injuries. In the evening, central Tokyo was shaken by the explosion of crude homemade rockets that had apparently been launched from 2 cars parked near major government buildings. Police say no one was injured. They blame left-wing radicals. Time now is 7:30 past the hour. It's reported that Soviet and Afghan troops have launched a major new offensive against guerrilla strongholds near Kabul. At the same time, the Soviets say their forces in Afghanistan are being reduced. Bert Quint reports.
A Soviet general said today the 8,000 or so Soviet troops who begin withdrawing from Afghanistan tomorrow will not be replaced. General Mikhail Sotskov told foreign journalists American Defense Secretary Weinberger was lying when he said the Soviets plan to sneak other soldiers into the country to maintain the Soviet presence at its current strength of about 115,000. The Soviets say the withdrawal is designed to speed up the Afghan-Pakistani peace talks. Sosko said one tank, 2 infantry, and 3 air defense regiments would be the ones to go. He said the Afghan forces have gained experience during the Russians' nearly 7 years here and will continue many operations on their own. The Soviets, he added, will remain as advisors, maintain security at key economic projects, and secure the country's transport lines. Bert Quint, CBS News, Kabul.
This was to have been the day that Israeli Prime Minister Shimon Peres and Foreign Minister Yitzhak Shamir swapped jobs, but the switch is postponed for at least 24 hours because of a dispute over the makeup of the cabinet. On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 1.25 points at 1799.63, big board volume 19 million shares. The dollar was mixed in early trading, little change today in gold prices. It's 710.